Hey everybody, and welcome to Back Issues, the only comic podcast that actually remembers the original run of Valiant Comics. I am your host, Jason. With me tonight are Jamie.
Hey!
And Dick.
Hey, you did that out of order.
I did it on purpose.
He's so, yeah, with you.
Gotta mix it up. Alright, tonight's comic. Well, we had such a successful time, I feel, last time talking about Doctor Doom, that I lined up one of the quintessential Doctor Doom stories. I'm talking Marvel graphic novel number 27, Emperor Doom. So, before we get into this, let's see the basic cast. Written by David Michelinie, Mark Gruenwald, and Jim Shooter. Penciled by Bob Hall, inked by Bob Hall and Keith Williams. Well, it's got Jim Shooter. I mean, come on. I love Jim Shooter. Alright. Basic rundown of this. Dr. Doom's up to his old hijinks and winds up pretty much jacking and enslaving the Purple Man to amplify his powers. Purple Man has the power through pheromones to control people's minds. This device Doom comes up with is going to amplify that power on a global scale. Well, to do this, Doom goes to the then-exiled Namor, who is an enemy of humanity and pretty much seen as one of the biggest bad guys walking. Doom gives Namor the ability to circumvent certain life forms that have the ability to resist Purple Man's power naturally, specifically synthetic life. At the time running around in Marvel, there's only a few of those. You had, like, Vision and Machine Man.
And Ultron.
And, let's see.
That was it. That was the only three they mentioned.
That they mentioned, but there's still others. Like, at the time, wasn't ROM still a Marvel property?
I don't know, but it was specifically said in the story that he only needed to take out three particular ones, and those were the three.
But yeah, so mind you, this is 1987 era comics we're talking about. Namor's a bad guy. Doom is seen as like one of the preeminent bad guys. So this is kind of really going places.
Okay, I gotta interrupt though. Who the hell is the Purple Man?
Purple Man is a, I believe, classic Daredevil villain.
He's a villain of Daredevil, and as it's mentioned, in the comic, or what Jason said earlier, he has a pheromone that makes people subservient to him. Only people like with extremely high wills, like Daredevil, Kingpin, Captain America,
Doom,
and Namor, the Submariner, and so forth, would be immune to that. Also, if you're... This is a plot point, by the way. If you're someone who does not breathe or take in nutrients through your skin, you're also immune, because that's how it's spread.
So yeah, Doom has Namor, Jack, Vision, and Machine Man, and Ultron, and put basically these discs on them that rewire them so they can be affected by Purple Man's power. Meantime, Wonder Man, one of my favorite Avengers, is undergoing testing from Tony Stark to figure out just how his body creates and uses ionic radiation and ionic energy. So, big plot point, Tony locks Wonder Man in basically a coffin for 30 days. And within this 30 days, Doom's plan gets enacted.
Well, not so much a coffin, but more of a sensory deprivation chamber, which actually Wonder Man likened it to a coffin when he was being put into it. So
that's the line I remembered when I was saying it. But yeah, so while Wonder Man's in the sensory deprivation chamber, Doom's plan gets enacted, and he double-crosses everybody. It's great. He goes to the UN, has the UN basically name him ruler of the world. Namor tries turning and saying, hey, what the hell? What about the oceans? To which Doom goes, oh, you know that crystal I gave you? It's an amplifier, you asshole. And takes over Namor. Leaving nobody on Earth that anybody knows of immune to Doom's mind control. Well, what he didn't realize is Wonder Man. Wonder Man pops out of the sensory deprivation chamber after the month is up, and the world is completely changed. There's no more war. There's no more famine. People are setting aside differences. Doom has basically created his own utopia. But Wonder Man's sitting there the entire time going, is it right to end this? It's under false pretenses, and it's really brought about by evil, but the outcome is right. Should I do this? Should I fight Doom? He winds up deciding to fight Doom, and breaks the mental conditioning on Captain America, Wasp, Iron Man, and Hawkeye. They go after Doom, take out an entire island full of robots, both human-sized and gigantic freaking mechs, accidentally kill the Purple Man, but mind you, I say kill in quotes because this is comics, Purple Man did come back, and stop Doom's plan. But at the end, there's a really interesting page where they sit there and say, was it really so bad? Did we do the right thing? And I think that's the essence of this comic, is that question of, is it right or is it wrong to have peace, the right kind of peace, if it's achieved through evil means?
Yeah, you basically have the throughout the whole, not only does Wonder Man himself struggle with the notion midway through, but yeah, basically the entire comic in a lot of sense kind of puts that question forth: does the ends justify the means? I mean, yeah, certainly you have a better world on the surface, but on the underside, no one has freedom. As Captain America states, every person is a slave under Doom's rule. So, you know, there that is something that definitely gets posed by the entire comic. And it's a very common theme in all literature, really.
Now, that's the real big thing that you bring up. Captain America said there were slaves. But at the same time, to them, they were happy. They, you know, felt Doom was doing the right thing. Like, the average citizen, let's say.
Well, what's really interesting about that is that's really exemplified with what happens after Doom rises to power. All of these sorts of things that a lot of people say are common sense and should be, you know, should take place, like Africa joining South Africa joining the UN, stuff like that. All these things happen that people want to have happen.
It was South Africa breaking apartheid.
Yeah, exactly. All these things that they thought were never going to happen, that are these things that would be great for society, happen all at once because Doom rose to power and there was no more wars and stuff. And it's really interesting to see how supposedly someone who's so evil fixes all these societal ills that are, you know, everywhere. All of this inequality and poverty and, you know, famine and all this shit. Doom fucking fixes all that because he's fucking Doom.
One thing, actually, you know, there's a word that comes right out of the Italian fascist, it comes right out of the Italian fascist playbook for Mussolini, where Doom mentions all these things and says good things are happening and ends up with, and even the trains are running on time. And so it really does, it makes perfect sense that Captain America would be the one to, once he comes back to his senses, become incensed to this, because who but Captain America would know better about, you know, who actually fought in World War II and saw the horror of Nazi tyranny that was, you know, from the perspective of many Germans, Hitler was doing good, and, you know, but, you know, the price that we paid was loyalty and blood that was being spilled. You know, in the name name of the master race, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. The ideal.
And it was Captain America who fought tooth and nail against that in World War II. So it really does put that question there, you know, is it, you're testing essentially fascism on a global scale, at least in terms of fiction.
One of the things that I really find interesting about this whole thing, though, is all this great shit is happening and the world is happy and everything, right? So what does Doom do? He gets bored. And that's made very obvious if you look at just the way that he's reacting to the entire situation. He doesn't really, you know, he's not his typical boasting Doom self. He's very much quiet and very, you know, reserved after it. It's very interesting to see how he gets exactly what he wants, and then it almost feels as if he doesn't want it.
Well, the thing that they point that gets floated more or less, if you watch how Doom's reactions as everything goes, is he conquers the world way too easily. Doom is somebody who needs to challenge himself. He needs to have feel vindicated in his accomplishments, and I think as he turns up and sees he needs something to fight against. He really needs to be able to feel like he's fighting something he views as evil. And when he gets into that position of ultimate power, suddenly he's just doing, you know, desk work, which is beneath Doom.
Look at the other side of it, though. Doom already ruled Latveria at the beginning of it, and the populace mm-hmm. loved him.
Right.
But they loved him of their own free will.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference for Doom. He wants to be adored. He wants people to look up to him. He doesn't want to have to make them do it.
And that really is kind of the point. The other half of the point is that, you know, Doom understands he's basically ruling a world of puppets. And that's not what he wants. You know, this is a hollow victory for Doom. And he welcomes the Avengers trying to take it away from him.
He almost feels, like, happy that they did.
Not only that, he had a chance to stop them. And he actually decided not to, because even he knew this is not how it should go down. But Doom says, let the chips fall where they may. Because he pretty much was consigned to defeat at this point. And he didn't want to challenge, because this wasn't the world he wanted to rule.
No, he wanted to rule a world, while it may be under his fist, he did something to earn it instead of just jacking somebody else's powers.
What I really find interesting about it, too, is this whole thing culminates with Doom. Literally, he has a button that could stop him from being defeated by the Avengers that show up. He literally is moments away from pushing it and then doesn't push the button because he's just like, fuck it, I'll take over it another way.
Yeah, Doom actually denies the Deus Ex Machina. He turns it down and says, this is not how I do things. I'm going to win the world my way, and, you know, maybe it's a good thing they killed the Purple Man.
Yeah, that's, you know, it puts Doom in more of a sense of a... Doom is the classic anti-villain, and he doesn't do, you know, he doesn't approach his villainy... I think he approaches it as a necessary evil. I do what must be done because no one else can. And the world should be doomed because it is destiny. I want to put a thing like I've often said compare him to like Lex Luthor, which is a big kind of the DC equivalent, but Luthor is driven by personal glory. And he wouldn't mind stooping to those means to get that, I think. It just shows the difference that Doom has from the common villain, if you know what I mean.
It's interesting. It's almost as if Doom is a noble villain in a way, and this sort of theme I've noticed is played a lot through all of just Doom's existence. It's that he's the noble hero. He's a noble villain, pardon me. He's sort of an anti-hero almost. He's shown off as this horrible thing, and then, you know, a lot of the things he wants to do in a certain way come across as almost reasonable, kind of. But it's his pride that prevents him from actually achieving what he seeks, which is to rule the world.
basically, like last time, it was, you know, he was the grand chess player. In this, you see a bit of that, but you more see what's behind the mask, the hubris, the pride, you know, Doom's underworkings.
And in that sense, you know, where you saw in Emperor Doom, this was a man playing in when he fought Mephisto. Or I read in the other one, Doctor Doom, Doctor Strange, where he fought Mephisto. That was a plan he had probably been spending decades unfolding. And, you know, you see where the biggest disappointment for Doom is. You know, like we say, not only is the victory feels hollow to him. One, it comes too easily. And two, he feels like he's defeated. It's like he defeated a child. There's no joy in his victory because it was, like you mentioned earlier, it wasn't earned. This was something that Doom. This is a plan that Doom probably put together, you know, at lunch.
It really feels that way. It feels like this is like Doom's plan R kind of thing. It's like that far down the line. It's just like, I never thought I'd get to this. Why not try it? Let's say next week kind of thing. It didn't feel like one of his grand schemes. This is more like he was taking a dump and had a good idea.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is kind of Doom's stoner idea moment, as it were. He kind of's like, you know, I bet you I could use the Purple Man to take over the world, man. And then he takes a big fat toke off of his, you know, Vincent Von Bong.
I think to the point of that, you look at the Purple Man. The Purple Man is a extraordinarily vain person who enjoys the mere... He doesn't have any regard for the people. He doesn't really want their appeasement. He doesn't want their love. He just wants to be pampered, and he doesn't care how it comes across. And Doom is just a completely different villain in that manner.
Now, funny note. Funny you mention Kilgrave's mindset. Look at how the humans acted. When Doom was the Emperor, they acted how Purple Man wants people to act towards him. So it was kind of almost like Doom may have taken over the world, but Purple Man really enslaved the world.
Well, yeah, like I said, for Doom it was a hollow victory.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's like they acted more towards Doom how Purple Man would want them to act towards him, as opposed to Doom, what Doom wants.
What I mean is, you know... Purple Man, like, he doesn't care. He's making puppets to serve him. Doom doesn't want to rule a world of puppets. Doom wants to rule a world of people who revere his greatness. Puppets can't truly appreciate what Doom has given them.
And what's really funny is that's kind of the beauty of Doom as a character overall, is just that he kind of demands that, you know, people respect and revere him. And he is demanding of respect and being revered. He's very powerful, very smart individual. You know, he literally took his home country and pulled them out of a recession and turned them into a very profitable, happy nation. Nobody's hungry and everybody goes to school and everything. Doom fancies himself the hero, but will take any means necessary to get there. And I think what's really interesting about this is that even Doom can realize when the means used don't justify the end.
Well, you know, I've tossed this idea around myself, where you have the question of a person, like, is somebody happier free, or is somebody happier as a slave? And what I wanted to approach this personally in a story was somebody who knew they were a slave, accepted their situation, but they were treated well, and, you know, came by that decision, came by that appreciation for the situation, even in the face of being told that they need to be free, that they would refuse it. And I think, you know, like I said, these are puppets. They can't make choices. They can't appreciate what they have. They can only do what they're commanded. And that is simply not what Doom wants. Doom is a man. Doom may be a villain, but he's a villain of moral character, of high, lofty principle, if you will.
And I think that's, you touched on something there. Especially in that last page where they're talking, did we really do the right thing? There is a certain freedom in slavery, if you look at it. You're free from everything. You're even free from choice. You don't have to worry about that kind of shit. And to a lot of people, that is appealing. And that idea of peace through slavery is appealing simply because you don't have to worry about shit the overseers do, you know? Or in this case, Doomwood.
Well, yeah, the thing is, but like I said, the major difference here, and this is something I think Doom comes to realize, along with all the other things that he finds distasteful about the situation. And I hate to keep bringing this up, but these are puppets. They have no ability, not only do they have no ability to choose, they have no ability to appreciate or find the ability to bring upon themselves the ability to appreciate the situation. Now, interestingly enough, in the middle of the book, when Wonder Man is incognito and runs across a blind woman who tells her how wonderful it is that he found a place. To find a place among his place in society she was blind, she was doing something, I'm thinking music media or something like that, but it is almost, you know, it's a point where Wonder Man himself has to think, you know, you know, do I do this, or do I simply toss it away because everyone else is happier? And in that case, like, I need to have a purpose, you know, to, and these people are given the illusion of purpose. And that's kind of what's distasteful about this to Doom, and probably to the reader as well, and to someone like Captain America. Even though they look at all the stuff that's falling down around them, wars going back on, Cold War coming back on between the Soviet Union and the U.S., apartheid being reestablished in South Africa. This is the 80s, by the way, people. To keep the time period.
1987.
Yes. And you see leaders of the time, such as Reagan and Thatcher.
Castro,
yes. And I feel like, you know, for everyone in some way, it just who has the ability to appreciate the situation, it rings hollow, except for one exception, and that's Namor. I mentioned to you earlier when I was reading this that I thought Namor was a dick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, the whole thing is, throughout the entirety of the story, whenever Namor is involved, all he can think about is how much he hates surface dwellers. How much he hates people. He hates their war. He hates their wastefulness. He hates their disease that they spread. He hates how they ruin his oceans. All these things. It's the only thing he can do. Even after he gets... After he, what happens is, you know, the reason he becomes susceptible to the Purple Man, aside from the amplifier, the reason he becomes susceptible to the Purple Man's, Purple Man's ability is because this is a traditional weakness of Namor's, is he's been away from water for over a month, and Namor has to absorb seawater to become strong again, and Wasp realizes that and knocks water into the chamber, and that's where Namor destroys the machine, killing Purple Man in the process. And then right at the end, Namor he figuratively spits in the face of the heroes who saved him and him from enslavement, and Captain America's like, oh, okay, you know, was it Captain America who said this? Well, he mentions that, you know, well, just remember, it was surface dwellers who saved you. And, you know, my familiarity with Submariner as a character isn't great. I know he's kind of one of those characters that goes through, I'm a good guy, I'm a bad guy, I'm a good guy, I'm a bad guy. He used to be like a Fantastic Four villain, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, it really just kind of, you know, I don't know the whole history of Namor, but he did come across as an asshole.
Namor usually comes across as an asshole anyway. But yeah, for the record, it was Hawkeye who actually said that line. Yeah, just forget it was surface people who saved you too.
Yeah, thank you for correcting me on that.
Yep, no problem. But yeah, Namor always comes across as an asshole.
Right.
I think that's kind of his thing.
Well, but he is the Prince of Atlantis, is he not? And, you know, that's the thing with a lot of royalty. They tend to be stuffy and stuck up.
Very true. But yeah. Namor was an interesting character in this, because he really just wanted the ocean to himself, basically.
To be able and his people.
Yeah.
The Atlanteans.
And, you know, he gets screwed over by Doom right in front of the UN, which is a big dick move on Doom's part.
And this is right after he helped Doom by putting control discs onto Vision and Machine Man and Ultron. Interestingly enough, he gets Vision to agree. He can't put it on Vision because Vision has too many abilities to get away from it. But then he gets basically blackmails Vision into doing it by because he has control of Star Fox and Scarlet Witch. Well, you know, he's married to her, and he's gonna tell Star Fox to murder Scarlet Witch. And that's the only way he can get it to do it. So you can tell exactly because at this point he still has free will. It's just, you know, wow, what a fucking asshole.
Oh, yeah, Namor gives no fucks whatsoever.
No fucks whatsoever. And, you know, that's kind of, it's interesting, especially played against the whole thing with apartheid, nonetheless. Namor's a freaking bigot.
Wow. Oh, yeah, he's a throwback, definitely.
Definitely.
I think that's why over the years they've softened him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Made him less anti-surface, you know?
Which is really kind of interesting, because with Aquaman, it's been going the other way. They make him more of an isolationist, you know, in DC Comics, if I'm not mistaken.
It depends on the version.
It depends on the writer, I guess.
But yeah, Namor, first off, he's blunt, you know?
Yeah, he's definitely a blunt instrument.
He's not above, you know, using Star Fox to, you know, kill Scarlet Witch to convince Vision. He's not, you know, above killing the Purple Man to get rid of Doom's machine. He does not give a fuck.
Right.
Is it just me, or is he kind of a dick?
Yeah, we've called him a dick, an asshole. A fucking dick.
Fucking asshole.
Fucking asshole.
Does he get any better after this? Is he actually a cool character?
Eventually, they do soften him a bit. In fact, he becomes an Avenger at one point.
Right.
And at another point, more recent, he becomes an X-Man.
And yeah, all this Atlanteans other shit. Are mutants, believe it or not.
Well, no. Atlanteans are not mutants. They are Homo Romanus. Namor is a mutant. He's half human.
Ah, okay. Namor's a mutant. My bad.
He's technically he is.
Boy, wasn't Namorita also a mutant?
I don't remember. She's weird to deal with.
She's also dead, so hardly matters.
Namor is actually chronologically Marvel's first mutant. So there you go on that one. But yeah, he's a dick. I mean, there's no other way to put it. But yeah, he's. Just straight up kills the Purple Man, nearly kills the Scarlet Witch. He doesn't care. That's his motivation. He only cares about the ends. The means do not matter to him.
Right. That's an interesting contrast to Doom, really, who is basically sitting back and saying, were these the right means to reach these ends? And even then, are these ends the ends that I really wanted in the first place?
And it's really interesting, because, like, last time, Doctor Strange acted in the same way. You know, the counterpoint to Doom. You have Namor acting as the counterpoint. Which is really an interesting contrast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, in the Doctor Strange, Doctor Doom, the contrast there was Strange's humility versus Doom's pride. And what you have here, the contrast with Namor, is Doom's I'm gonna say valiance, but I can think of a better word for it.
Honor.
Honor. Doom's honor versus Namor's, you know, sort of hard-headed, you know, purpose, so to speak, I guess, if you want to put it that way. Maybe you can think of a better word.
Now, another thing I really loved about this comic was it's centered around, as a, you know, a leading protagonist role, one of my favorite Avengers. Mm-hmm. That would be Wonder Man.
Right.
Started out as a double agent for Baron Zemo, went mm-hmm. good, died for like 2-3 years or some shit.
Right.
Came back, found a replicant of himself, that would be the Vision, married mm-hmm. to the woman he was in love with. You know, I feel bad for the character, but at the same time, he makes the most of it. He's lighthearted. His interactions with Beast, like in the 70s and 80s, were mm-hmm. fucking amazing. The two bounced off each other so well. You'd actually see Hank McCoy, you know, shooting jokes and one-liners instead of being a more stoic, you know, serious character.
And yeah, we could probably do another episode on that all day long of comparing Beast to any other X-Men, particularly Cyclops, because Beast one of the big traits of Beast is he is a very laid back. Well, maybe not so much laid back, but very jovial character. One who doesn't have any qualms about you know, being a little less than serious when he can. Whereas you take someone like Cyclops, who's teeth gnashingly. To the point, so ridiculously stiff, you know.
With Beast, it's worth noting he was originally kind of laid back, jovial, joked a lot, but then when he got the fur, he became very serious and dramatic. You know, he had this, like, am I a man, am I a beast kind of thing going for a while. And eventually he got, partially with Simon's help, that is to say Wonder Man, with Simon's help, he started to get his, you know, softness back.
Right, right.
That's what's always endeared me to the character.
Mm-hmm.
At least of Wonder Man, I mean. Like, he can make you joke, laugh, and have fun, but at the same time, he's one of the strongest Avengers. I mean, this guy has, like, I think class 100 strength, which is can bench press 100 tons.
Wow.
I mean, I'm not...
Maybe they should have him since the time of Cyclops when he stops being less of a douchebag.
Well, sadly, currently Wonder Man is dead, but... Oh, well.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
And I don't think Cyclops is ever going to be any less of a douchebag anyway, so...
The moment that they make Cyclops not into a douchebag is the moment that X-Men starts to perform worse. That's a fact. Cyclops being a dick, I feel, is kind of necessary for X-Men to work, but that's just me.
It's already losing sales as it is.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, I looked it up. Wonder Man is actually rated at class 100+.
Nice.
He is stated to be equal to Thor in strength.
Yeah.
You know, with the abilities that he has, which, you know, immortality, flight... Mm-hmm. Fucking superhuman strength, you know, ionic energy form.
Right.
He's pretty much immune to everything. Disease, mind control, etc.
I'm sorry. You put him on a level with Thor. Now, where is that? Now, I ask you, like, how many, let's just keep it to Earth Realm heroes. Earth Realm. I'm sorry, I've been watching too many Mortal Kombat videos. To Earth heroes, particularly, how many would come up stronger than Wonder Man? Obviously the Hulk, right?
Century.
Is that it?
Shit.
Thing, maybe?
Thing, I do not believe so. Pretty much you'd have to go to cosmic level beings.
Right.
Like any of the, Heralds of Galactus...
Thing would be close, though, right? Because Thing has tussled with Hulk plenty of times.
That's the thing. Hulk is class infinity, technically.
I see. Okay.
His strength has no cap ever.
Now you want me to look this shit up.
Doesn't he just get stronger the more pissed off he gets? Anyway?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
put it this way, at his strongest was when, right after Planet Hulk, when his wife got blown up. He was, when he came to Earth seeking revenge, he was so strong, if he punched the ground, he could have split the world in half if he'd wanted to. Hulk is incalculable. But, let's see. When it comes to strength, there's a lot of people that are in the 100-ton range. Apocalypse, Jean Grey's telekinetic powers can move that much. Thor, Galactus, Sentry. Rogue actually is currently class 100 because she absorbed the powers of Wonder Man. Ultron. Fuck. God damn. I could go on for hours.
How many heroes are there that are class universe, though? Like Hulk, or is Hulk the only one?
Hulk is the only real known one.
Yeah. On Earth, he's probably the only one that would come
in that close. Everybody else has measured power levels, even the gods. There are two beings that have an infinite, and that's Hulk and the one above all, which is Marvel's version of, I don't want to say the Judeo-Christian god, but the same idea.
I thought the one above all was one of the artists or writers for Marvel.
Nobody looks like Jack Kirby, told.
Okay, well, I'm looking at this right now. It does put Thing on the same level, potentially incalculable, as Wonder Man. But
really?
I think it... clearly, I think he would be... both of them are under Hulk. And I'm looking at some of the people... Juggernaut is in here. Iron Man, when he's in the suit. Deathlok. I'm going to A-Bomb, actually, and Abomination. Abomination is... No, I take that back. Abomination is listed as 200 tons, and A-Bomb is 100 tons.
Oh, no, you're right. Actually, currently, Thing is class 100 strength.
Yeah. Yeah, he's class 100. So, yeah, he would be on Wonder Man's level, but I think both... But I don't think there's anyone on Earth, naturally at least, who matches the Hulk.
So then, I know this is getting off topic, but I am curious. Where technically does Deadpool fall on that curve, then?
Slightly above average, actually.
Yeah, Deadpool isn't particularly known for strength. Deadpool's power, aside from his ability to know that he's in the comic book, his power is essentially he can't die. He has Wolverine's healing power, which was stuck into him by the Weapon X project. He doesn't have super strength. I think he has like peak human strength, does he?
Yeah, he's about on par with Captain America.
Right.
For sure.
Well, I should say on par with where Captain America started. Because now, technically, Captain America does have super strength. He can pick up a fucking car. But,
According to this, Deadpool can lift 2 tons.
Oh, yep. I was just pulling it up, too. I was about to say, Deadpool has minor superhuman strength.
What a bunch of fucking nerds we are looking this shit up.
What a fucking bunch of nerds we are running a comic book podcast.
I was just going to say. That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
I'm just saying, I think we've reached a whole level of nerd. They're trying to compare this shit.
Now, do you think that Deadpool could beat Wonder Man?
Fuck no.
Could he beat Wonder Man? I think it would be a draw because Deadpool cannot match Wonder Man in terms of strength. But Wonder Man, he can't really die. Wonder Man would win, but Deadpool's going to walk away, at least.
This is really another one of those annoying cases where it's down to whoever's writing it.
Right.
Oh, that's gay.
You got two characters whose main ability is you can't fucking die, even though one of them is somehow dead. I don't get that. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
you know death is cheap. Actually, Deadpool can lift more than Cap.
Really?
Yeah, Cap can't even hit 1 ton.
He's been written inconsistently over the years.
That's true. The 70 years, you're going to get a lot of inconsistencies.
I mean, there's been, you know, times where he can lift also, like a couple tons.
Yeah. Also, this is a Wikia, so you have to keep in mind that anyone can edit this.
Not to mention, this is Marvel Comics. Any idiot can write them.
Right. How come we don't have jobs writing them then?
Back to good comics.
Right. Dino. Okay. Yeah, let's get back on track.
I have to say, this comic definitely kind of built upon my experience with the last Doom comic we read. It only made me like the character more, because, you know, at the end of the whole thing, he's like, fuck it, let it all burn. And it just kind of goes to show that he holds himself to a higher standard than most villains do. And I think that what really makes him appeal to me is that Doom has this sort of pseudo-ethics about him that, you know, he has to do it himself. And that's just been exemplified here with, you know, he literally got what he wanted. He got exactly what he wanted and then gave it all up because he didn't do it himself. He kind of exploited something else, which almost it feels like it's beneath him. And I just find it interesting that there's a villain who's supposedly supposed to be evil, but he's got to do it his way and have it be legit, or else it's not legit, and he's going to walk away from it.
And to really drive that home, it's no one will say that faster than his archenemies, the Fantastic Four. Well, maybe not Johnny Blaze, but the other three would.
I got a really hard question for you guys, if you don't mind.
Okay, okay.
Doom's world, would you want to live in it or no?
How do we know we're not living in it now?
because we're unhappy.
Yeah, we would be happy if we were living unhappy. In Doom's world. I necessarily wouldn't put it out of my realm of possibility, but I think I'm a little too hard-headed for the control to actually work, so I have a feeling that I probably would just wonder why everybody suddenly liked this random political opponent, but I wouldn't necessarily dislike it.
I don't think I would want to live in a world like that. In fact, while I was reading this, I put myself in that situation of saying, as someone who would look around and say, what the fuck is this shit? I don't like this. Everybody's just doing what they're told. Everybody's falling in line. And that's my person. I don't like being told what to do. I mean, you know, no, I'm not saying that, you know, I won't work with other people. But, you know, I'm a free thinker. I'm an individualist. I can't be somebody who falls in line just because they're supposed to. And I would never want to live in a world like that. Even though I have, like I said earlier, I have, in terms of story, thought about the situation. But I think one of the big differences, the character I'm thinking of, that I'm thinking of putting it down, she would want to be in that position because she's happy. And the people around her make her happy. Whereas in this case, you just do what you're told because the Purple Man Mist makes you. And I think, you know, I think I would, you know, I would like to think, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to, you know, trying to make this from a comic situation, you know, or, you know, opposed to real life. But I would like to think I would be one of those people who would be affected and think, you know, no, I'm not doing this.
Now, see, I will fully admit, I would want to live in that world. I don't care enough about the individual. I mean, yeah, I want a purpose. That's a big part of it. I want to feel like I have a reason to exist, because I don't. But at the same time, I don't care. I would rather be in a peaceful world than be in this, you know?
And maybe that's the little place where you and I differ, because I look at my situation and I think, like, you know, fuck the world. You know, what have they done for me besides kick me in the face at every opportunity? Why would I want to do something for them? And, you know, I'm not a person, you know, I don't say that because I'm a mean person. I'm just going to says that from someone who doesn't like being, you know, screwed with. You know, manipulated, and I've had to deal with that a lot in my life, and I could not have that on any scale. Even though, you know, it might be a necessary evil in some cases, but no, I'm, you know, if I take you into my world, so to speak, You know, that's different. But, you know, I don't want to live for other people if I don't, just because I'm told to.
Well, that's a good part. In Doom's world, you don't have a fucking choice.
Exactly. You know, that's the whole, and that's, you know, what makes it scary and why I would sit with that with Wonder Man and later Captain America and say, this is wrong.
Nah, I'm more like Namor. The means are all that matters. I would rather have this world be at peace, no matter if it's through mind control or just nuking the shit out of everybody else. I just want peace. And I don't care. As long as I survive, I don't care how it gets there. All right,
we're not putting you in charge of the nuclear football anytime soon.
See, this whole thing is really fucking convoluted and complex of a question to ask someone, because you're asking me if I'd be willing to give up my free will in order to live in a place that is guaranteed to be safe. And while safety is definitely something that is, you know, alluring to me, I don't know if I'd be able to give up my ability to make decisions for myself.
A classic conundrum of philosophy, one that man has tousled with since his, since he lost his tail and grew a brain.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really deep question. There's a lot to look at with it. It's a very multifaceted. But yeah, back on the ranch. So now we have this overall vision of Doom. Well, a closer to overall vision. A man driven to a good end. When you really think about it, it is a good end. It's a noble end. But it's how he gets there, how he deals with the hubris, how he deals with the pride, how he deals with other people. Because that's two stories of Doom we've done now, and that's two stories of Doom where Doom has fucked over the person he's working with. But we get a more fuller view of the character. And I think he's honestly one of the more interesting characters Marvel has ever made. There's so much to him. He's like an, you know, I hate to use the Shrek line, but he's like an onion. He's got layers, you know?
I think in one respect, that Doom does still come across as a villain. He's still willing to view, in his aspirations, he's still more than willing to view people as tools or equipment to get his what he wants to get done. And I think that, you know, that is probably why he will always have to be considered a villain. Because ultimately, you know, he has to throw aside, he has to throw people under the bus or throw them into harm's way to get what he's done. And that, you know, is a classic a view of like politicians in the world, that they view people as pawns on a chessboard rather than actual people. And you could put that to corporations or any other large body of that nature.
Yeah, I can see where you're going. But yeah, so looking back, now that we've had, you know, two classic Doom titles under our belts, what's your overall thoughts on the character? Like,
I think that he's definitely a very deep, driven character, and you know, I'm not exactly the polar opposite, but definitely one that stands out to, as I've said before, DC's flagship villain, which is Lex Luthor. He really is something. Even Luthor has his own layers to go through. But, you know, there's something about Doom that sets him apart from the usual villain who's always thinking of himself and himself above everything else.
Doom and Lex are two sides of the same coin, and that's the notion that absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it takes a look at two different ways that it can corrupt you absolutely. With Doom, you have someone who's been thoroughly, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Corrupted by his own pride, his own need to be the best, his ambitions, and things like that. Thank you. Yeah, it's those have been what's really corrupted in him and prevented him from gaining the victory that he seeks, is because he's so vain. He had what he wanted and he gave it up because it didn't feel right. And that's where his weakness is. Whereas with Lex, it's really, you know, money is his weakness. He wants that what's going to benefit him the best and what's going to put more cash in his pocket, as opposed to what's going to be, you know, best for his legacy, as it were. And so it's really interesting to see those two be compared, because honestly, they're two completely separate sides of the same coin, which is, you know, this absolute power sort of thing.
Well, not so much money when it comes to Lex, because he has no end of the of money. With Lex, he wants to be the center of the universe. Doom sees conquering the world as his duty, and whereas Lex Luthor sees conquering the world as his birthright. That it's his world to rule because he's Lex Luthor and he should stand above everyone. And really quickly, that's put in a very interesting it's illustrated very interestingly in the one I don't remember where this comes from, but Lex is talking about how he'll have the tallest building in the world and everyone else will be beneath him and have to look up to him. And then flash forward to 20-30 years later, he's standing at the top of that building that he's achieved his dreams, and he's looking up at Superman flying overhead.
Yeah, that's a powerful image, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, before we get around to the wrap-up, I want to bring something to you guys' attention.
Okay.
You realize the gaping plot hole in all this, Jamie. Especially you.
Right.
You realize the gaping plot hole in using Kilgrave as the mechanism. Right?
The fact that Daredevil and Kingpin are immune to him?
There are several others, too.
And others, too. But I think what they tried to play it off as is that Doom's device amplifies his, amplifies the strength of, Purple Man's pheromones to the point where they can't be resisted. Even, they said, as Wonder Man points out, if Cap can't, resist the effect, then no one can. Except, well, Doom, and then even then, Doom will take his face plate off, stand there and breathe in Purple Man's
pheromones,
and it won't have any effect on him whatsoever. So
no, in fact, he does it just to piss Kilgrave off.
Right, that's true.
But no, there is a little bit of a plot hole there with the kind of bullshit explanation laid over it.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was kind of funny that you would still have a greatly diminished number, but a number of characters that could have popped up and said, hey, fuck you, at any point in time.
I would have expected Daredevil to be one of those characters, or...
I'd expect Kingpin to be one of them.
Kingpin. There's you think Thor would be... maybe Thor's not around.
I think Thor is off Earth at the time. I'm trying... Okay. Oh, I don't Dr. remember Strange. My Thor chronology.
Doctor Strange, you'd think would be one, you know? And it's, you know.
I think the thing is here, though, besides Thor being off planet, I think the rest of the heroes kind of asked themselves that same question and kind of accepted it because Doom was bringing about peace and fixing shit. I think that's kind of the way you can explain away that plot hole. However, it is a very massive and gaping one.
They put, you know, a layer of, you know, duct tape over it by saying, oh, we had an power amplification.
But that wouldn't explain the Kingpin, because the Kingpin wouldn't be happy in this universe. He's greed personified. To the point of, you know, not like Lex where he has lofty goals. He just wants everything to be his.
Very true. But like I said, they've kind of duct taped over that plot hole by saying, oh, Doom is amplifying the power. Nobody can resist.
Right. You know, I don't understand. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's flimsy. That's all I'm saying.
It's very flimsy. It doesn't account for someone like the Kingpin or like, say, Mr. Sinister or Apocalypse or any number of people, really, or like Magneto, for example, would just shrug this off and say, fuck you, Doom.
Well, luckily, that didn't happen until a couple years later. But where the fuck was Apocalypse? I would love to see him throw down against Doom.
That's interesting. They have not gone against each other, have they?
Not that I know of.
I think that would actually make them money, so Marvel is actively suppressing that storyline.
Right.
They actually wrote it in the mid-80s.
Oh my god.
It's in a briefcase that Stan Lee keeps handcuffed around his arm at all times.
Right. Do not release to public. Will make us money is what it says on the briefcase in big black letters.
And now that's even to that point, they were making money until a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, to be honest, I think M-Day was the beginning of the end for Marvel, because then they did say, well, let's just, not just that, but also One More Day in particular. They decide, well, you know, we don't care about our canon. We don't care about what's making our comics work. Let's just fuck with things and see what happens. And it's gotten to this point where they're just like, eh, screw tradition. We're just going to, we're going to, you know, whatever. We do what we want.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
yeah, and let's not get into what it's become now.
And honestly, I would say even before M-Day, I would have said back in
Clone Saga,
Onslaught.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Maybe they ran out of ideas and they figure, well, we'll just grab whoever and see what they write and just put it out there. I don't know. It's kind of sad, actually.
But yeah, so all in all, yeah, pretty good comic. Definitely,
yeah.
Support your local comic shop. Find a reprint or a first edition, whatever. Read it. Enjoy it.
Yeah, I highly recommend this one. It's another good Doom comic. I almost want to go out on a limb and say that you should go read just about any story with Doom in it, but I'm sure there's a really stupid one somewhere out there where Doom becomes a unicorn or something.
Oh, yeah, there was a really stupid one where you get beat up by Squirrel Girl the first time.
Well, that's Squirrel Girl. That,
yeah,
you
I know. Squirrel Girl, stupidity follows Squirrel Girl wherever she goes. But, you know, she didn't used to be a bad character. I think they could have done more with Squirrel Girl. She could have become the next Spider-Man, but they screwed that up.
I'll agree. I mean, maybe not to Spider-Man level, but she could have been a lot bigger and better character than she is. And it's
well,
sad.
That whole thing is just Marvel was saying, see, we can put any bullshit into a fucking comic panel and it'll sell. And I don't know how Squirrel Girl did the first time she was run, but I'm pretty sure it did okay.
Bombed horribly.
Oh, thank God.
But yeah, so there we are at the end of another episode.
Yeah, I want to think one thing I want to point out is that I think I like Doctor Strange versus Doctor Moon better, but this is a good story in itself.
Yeah, I gotta agree. I mean, this one stands up really well on its own. But yeah, so that's it. Another episode down.
Right.
Our 13th episode.
Woo! Hey. When we get to 20, that's the sign of the apocalypse. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Age of apocalypse will come.
Oh, folks, this has been Back Issues. I am Jason. With me have been Dick and Jamie.
Hey.
Hi, I'll see you guys later.
Have a good one.